Welcome to episode number 191.
It's time for the RV Podcast. Traveling North America in an RV. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of RV reporters.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the RV Podcast. Doesn't make any difference what kind of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a fifth wheel, a tent. Even if you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this show is for you. Because here we talk about getting out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and always using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV lifestyle. So you're very welcome here, and we are very honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, it always amazes me how our RVs enhance our lifestyle. Jennifer and I collect stories from the road on how people use their RV, and those stories are endless, and no two are exactly the same. The hobbies, the personal interest, and the discoveries that people make when they start traveling in an RV inspires us, and it gives us ideas on activities that we can participate in, places we need to go visit. So in this week's episode, during our interview segment, you are going to meet a bunch of different RVers that we encountered on the road a couple of weeks ago when we were in Arizona. And I think you're going to enjoy learning the many, many different ways we can use our RV. But we have much more in this podcast as well. We've got RV news, RV tips, traveling tech ideas, and much, much more. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
Well, as this episode goes live, we find ourselves in Cambridge, Ontario, Canada, where we're doing a seminar this week at the headquarters of Road Trek Motorhomes and the Irwin Heimer Group of North America. They're having an event called Owner's School, which is a special three-day gathering at the assembly factory for new owners of Heimer and Road Trek Motorhomes. So we're going to be meeting a lot of new people this week. It's the first of three of those owner schools that they're going to be doing this year. And I'm told that all of them are filled up, but without any openings, but they're planning future sessions. So we'll keep you informed, but we'll also let you know what this one's like, give you a feel for it. We'll do a video on our RV Lifestyle channel on YouTube, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
It is. I'm wondering how many people attend each of these workshops.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
We'll find out as we're there. It's, you know, they're learning, the owner's school is to teach them, you know, how the plumbing system works on an RV, the electrical system, what to do if something breaks. I think they're getting some tours. And of course, there's a campground we'll be at in Waterloo, Ontario. We'll be arriving after we record this podcast.
You know, this really is the best way to learn how to work your expensive investment, because lots of times a dealer might not, the salesperson might not know everything that ideally they would know.
Yeah, you know, we think that they do, but, you know, a lot of time the dealers, the salespeople, they represent lots of different brands and, you know, they're trying to get you in and out of there so they can go sell another one. So sometimes those orientation tours are a little quick and you know, we all read our RV manuals, but this idea of an owner school, I think that's a great idea.
I know. I tell people to take a video when you're being showed how everything works. Make a video.
Yeah, that is a really good good piece of advice. I wish we had done that when we got ours. But
you're just a video guy.
I am a video
guy. I think you were so excited you couldn't wait to drive it out off the parking lot before I changed my mind.
There you go. That was exactly it. So let's see. Since we last talked, audience, I did have my elbow surgery. And, you know, I guess I should have known when somebody says, oh, it's just going to be minor surgery. There is no such thing as minor surgery.
Well, there is no such thing as minor surgery. And there also is such a thing as a patient that doesn't do what the doc says.
Who? You talking about me?
I'm talking about you.
Yeah, well, don't be squealing on me, but my goodness, I never would have done this. This has not been fun. It's been a week.
This was not the little thing that we thought.
No.
It was not the little procedure, no big deal thing. It turned into, wow, I think you were sliced from, you know, your wrist to your elbow.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah, just about.
Oh, I'm just learning some nursing skills.
Yeah, we've been bandaging it, and it, we've had some complications with it, but we're going to Canada anyway. So I don't get the stitches out for another week, but we're going to Canada, and I got to juggle. I got to hold a video camera. It's going to be fun. This is going to be fun. Let me carry the tripod.
Oh, I'm about ready to turn you in here.
Folks, she thinks I'm
following orders.
She thinks I'm not a good...
You're not a good patient.
This happened back in January. We were up at the up in our winter campout up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I was trying to get a picture of a bunch of our RVers who were crossing the snow-shrouded Mackinac Bridge that separates the Upper and Lower Peninsula of Michigan. And I took one step out of our RV on the UP side and went down. It was glare ice underneath a slight covering of frost, and man, cracked my elbow. I didn't think it was much. It turned out to be just a minor little fracture, but we had to go in for surgery last week to clean up and repair some stuff. And
hopefully we'll get you healed. It's just a matter of how long it's going
to
take.
It's hard not
when
to
we
have
do it the hard way.
Full use of your hand.
Especially your right arm.
Yeah.
It is hard.
So that's it. And you had a bit of a scare this week. You were pretty funny. She came up to me, folks, and she said, hey, how am I doing a good job on the podcast and on the videos? I said, well, yeah. And she said, well, don't you think I'm entitled to a bonus? I should have wondered why. And I just blurted out, well, of course, sure, okay. And then she explained why.
I explained that I had lost my key for the RV. And I know the key cost $250 because I thought I lost my key before at a January campout. And I could not find that key. And I'd given a bunch of clothes to the Salvation Army. And I was back at the Salvation Army asking if anybody had found the key in a pocket. Because I tend to do that, put the key in my pocket. But anyway, after you spent $250 and bought me a new key for the last RV,
we vowed
a year
that would
later,
never happen
I found
again.
It. I found it.
Yeah.
It was just misplaced. It
and
wasn't
that
lost.
RV's been
it was
traded
just
in.
Misplaced in a pair of warm pants that I never will wear that had a little secret compartment. So it wasn't lost. So I've been going through all my pockets.
So this is the second time.
This is the second time.
It was misplaced. It wasn't lost.
Well, I thought it was lost because I thought I'd gone through every coat that I had. And you sent me one more place. You said, do it again. Look in all your coats. And voila.
There it was.
Like 30 seconds later, I found the key. So happy ending. Don't have to, probably $300 in a year. Price is probably going up like everything else.
So I don't have to give you a bonus then?
No, you don't have to give me a bonus.
Okay. Whew, that's good. what else? Oh, another use of our RV. We had it in use all weekend. Well, on Sunday particularly, we drove to a city about 50 miles away and watched our granddaughters. They were in a dance competition, and we brought the RV on Sunday because we had to be there like from noon until 7 or 8 at night, and we didn't want to leave Bo alone, so Bo came with us, and I worked in the RV between dance numbers. You stayed and watched every one of them.
Yeah, I did. All the fathers that don't have RVs were sitting out in the lobby with proper space in between trying to get some work done or trying to zone out. Yeah. You know, they don't want to sit there and watch. I don't know what time in the morning it started. It was forever.
9 o'clock, I think it started.
9 o'clock. Yeah. I mean, 3 days of that.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, be supportive to your child and get in there and watch. But yeah. You don't want to spend
so we
your
watched
whole day.
Our granddaughter Wawa and our granddaughter Rachel, they competed. They both did very well, and that was fun. But I was in the RV between dance numbers with
Bo. We'd text you and say, running early.
Yeah, it worked out great.
Get in here.
But another reason to use the RV, because, you know, I got work done, and I spent much of the day trying to figure out how to reset the clocks in our Sprinter RV. It is not the easiest thing in the world to do. And I do it twice a year, you know, with daylight savings time. You'd think I would remember. And I went through this sequence of about pushing about 400 buttons and finally got the clocks set.
Maybe they teach that at owner's school.
They should. You know what? Now that I know how to do it, I'll tell them. They should teach that. I found one instructional video on YouTube, but it was in German. So that didn't do too well. And lots of instruction on how to set the clock in Mercedes-Benz cars, but I finally figured it out. And it's set out until fall, so that's good. All right. Meantime, what are the RV news? Let's find some of the stories that you need to know about this week. What'd you find, Jennifer?
Okay. The new report shows national park visitors bring in $35.8 billion in benefits last year to the U.S. economy. The report by economists in the U.S. Geological Survey and the National Park Service showed 330 million national park visitors brought in $18.6 million of direct spending to communities within 60 miles of the national park. That spending contributed towards 306,000 jobs with an overall economic benefit of nearly $36 billion.
Whoa, that's a lot of money.
Sure is.
Well, we're talking about national parks. There's a plan underway out west to, and boy, I'm surprised this hasn't gotten more controversy. Plan to remove the mountain goats from Washington's Olympic National Park. Now, why would they do that? Because that's what you want to get pictures of, right? Well, the mountain goat was reportedly brought into the park by hunters in the 1920s, before Olympic was designated as a national park. And in recent years, the mountain goats have become a bit of a problem. As a non-native species, there's no natural salt, which is essential to their diet. And some blame this for some aggressive behavior towards people. There was a hiker who was gored by a mountain bike several years back. And people have noticed that they can be pretty aggressive. They hurt native plants. And so the Park Service has a plan to move as many as they can catch to the North Cascades, where it is their native habitat. And the others are going to be killed if after 2 years there's still a bunch there. So I don't know. I'm sure we're going to hear more about that. That's going to cause some controversy out there. Now what else you got?
Now I know what I want for Mother's Day.
What?
When I tell you this story, you'll know what I want. A woman hiking at Kentucky's Red River Gorge last week was bit by a copperhead snake.
Ooh.
And carried away in an ambulance. The incident led to many reminders about the importance of snake safety when out on the trails. And we'll put a link to more safety tips and a previous podcast interview we published that covered North American venomous snakes.
I remember that. Well, what's the gift
snake
you want?
Snake boots.
Snake boots?
Yeah, we go down to our sons in Georgia all over the place. Snake boots are in.
Yeah, you see the signs. Yeah, the snake boots for 2018 are in. Kids snake boots in stock. Well, those copperheads, they're nasty snakes. Oh, every snake. I'm sorry. These people who like snakes as pets are weird people. They're only one good snake.
Oh, no, it's stop not it. One that's people that know your phobia.
Yeah, I don't like snakes. Actually, I find them interesting. And I've thought about taking Bo when we had Wes this summer. We were going to do this a couple. Every year I go out there and I see these signs.
Every year you want to do
snake
this.
Snake training for your dogs, where they take your dog and they take them out with real snakes that they've either taped up, duct taped their mouths so they can't bite or remove the fangs or something. But and they teach dogs, you know, to be aware of snakes. I don't know how you do it with a copperhead because they don't rattle. And they're big.
They're fairly big. I thought they were on the smaller side.
Well, compared to some of the great big giant rattlesnakes, yeah. But they're fairly good sized snake, but they're mean, nasty little things. And modern moccasins. So I don't know how you train your dog about all those things. Copperheads are the ones that I hear people getting bit by more than rattlesnakes. But all right, snake boots. I write this down for Mother's Day for Jennifer. I found one more story, and it's kind of related to talk about wildlife. And this is from the Centers for Disease Control. And this is another topic that we've talked about on podcasts, so we'll put links to that as well. But for 2018, as we get warmer weather now across the country, the Centers for Disease Control has issued a warning about the rise of disease and illness caused from ticks, also mosquitoes and fleas. The CDC reported that the number of people reporting insect-borne illness between 2004 and 2016 tripled. More than 96,000 people reported insect-borne illnesses last year alone. And the best defense, protect yourself. We will tell you how to protect, particularly towards ticks. Ticks are epidemic, and you know they do cause disease. We have seen them just seem to spread everywhere, but they're in a couple of areas in the country. Out along Cape Cod, unbelievable how many ticks there are there. And then southwestern Michigan is really tick infested. We were just there a week ago, 10 days ago. And I mean, the tick warning signs were up even then. So, and our son who lives in Kalamazoo, we did that video on him, by the way. He got his new travel trailer a couple of weeks ago. You can find that on our YouTube channel. Anyway, our son Jeff was doing some yard work, and he got his first tick on him for the season.
Well, my memory is when our dog got a tick, and it was January.
Yeah, this year.
Bo was out playing in our son's yard.
Yeah, in southwestern Michigan. Bo got a tick in January.
It was cold, and there was a foot of snow.
Yeah, so these ticks are
tough.
Pretty resilient. And so we'll tell you, you just go to the podcast show notes. And show notes, you hear us talk about it all the time. Just go to, in this, you got to know the episode number. This is episode 191, right? So you go to roadtrekking.com/191. And then you'll see the show notes. Just scroll down to the opening section here. And we'll put links to all these stories that we just shared for you. And this portion of the podcast is brought to you by Campers Inn. Campers Inn is the RVer's trusted resource, has been for over 50 years now. They're the nation's largest family-operated RV dealership with 19 locations across the country, and they are growing. Campers Inn offers rock-bottom deals on motorhomes and fifth wheels and all sorts of different RVs at all of their locations. They have, as I said, 19 locations now in the eastern U.S. mostly. The newest store just opened in Ocala, Florida. There are new dealerships in Acworth, Georgia, in the northern Atlanta suburbs, in Thornburg, Virginia. They are home of the Integrity Pricing Guarantee. And I talk about that every week, but it is a big deal. What it means is that all quotes that you get for a new RV at Campers Inn include freight, orientation, detailing, prep. You are never going to be surprised by hidden upcharges and fees, as sadly often happens at other dealerships. Campers Inn sells motorhomes, travel trailers, and more from the industry's leading manufacturers like Tiffin, Grand Design, Coachman, Thor, Forest River, and Campers Inn exclusives like the Gulfstream Friendship and the Cruiser Embrace. They have award-winning RV sales and service, and really, you need to go visit. They have hundreds of RVs at the best prices. When you go, please tell them you heard about them on the RV podcast.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
Have you ever had a bar of soap slip out of your hands while using your small RV shower?
Yep. Happened to me.
Sometimes bending over to pick it up is not all that easy when showering in a small space. Even if you're in a big space, it can be hard to pick it up. This week, reader Liz wrote in to share her solution. A terry cloth cotton washcloth soap holder, complete with an attached string for easy storing.
Soap on a rope. The original soap on a rope.
Your sister used to give our kids soap on a rope every year for Christmas.
But
it
this
was
is
cute.
Soap on a rope in a washcloth?
Yeah. Liz wrote she made her washcloth soap holder to use specifically in her RV shower. After dropping her soap one too many times, Liz said she found the washcloth soap holder extremely helpful when showering in a small space. With the slippery soap secure. That's a hard one to say.
Slippery soap secure, yeah.
In the washcloth holder, she no longer has to worry about it slipping out of her hands. She also likes that she can hang it up when it's not in use, eliminating soap messes in her RV. I think this concept could also work well when using public campground showers too. Sometimes those showers are not the cleanest. You know, we wear flip-flops when in the public showers, so having something to protect the soap from hitting the ground could be helpful too. I did a little research and found the cotton terry cloth washcloth holder is a pretty popular idea. I saw several reviews saying they simply take the soap out of the washcloth holder and wash the cloth with their regular towels, keeping them sanitary. I found several links with step-by-step tips on how you could make your own washcloth soap holder, and I will include those in the show notes. Or if you're not, you know, you don't sew, I also found several stores that sell washcloth soap holders. I found them on Amazon, Walmart, Bed Bath & Beyond, Estee, and several other sites. Amazon sold three for $10.49. I'll include a link to that on the show notes. Thank you, Liz, for sending me an email with that very helpful suggestion.
Jennifer's Tip of the Week, brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on premium, powerful electric bikes, now with free shipping. Jennifer and I picked up our Rad Power Bikes earlier this year. We love them. We have the City Bike model. Rad Power Bikes has several different models, but the City Bike is the model we got. Mine is kind of like a beach cruiser. That's kind of the style on it. You sort of sit upright a little bit. You're not having to bend over those drop-down handlebars. Jennifer has this step-through model, which is, you know, doesn't have that center bar that you have to swing your legs over. You can just step right on through. A lot of people, men and women, are using that. Rad Power Bikes is a consumer direct brand. Now, they make a premium electric bike. I mean, it is solid quality. As soon as you get it and take it out of the box when they ship it to you, free, by the way, they ship it free, you'll put it together in just it won't take you much more than just 20 minutes or so. You will notice these are quality bikes. But because they deal directly with you, consumer direct brand, you don't have to pay those huge markups that are caused by dealers and third-party retailers. So Rad Power Bikes are often priced at less than half that of comparable bikes on the market because that dealer retail chain is cut out. All of their bike models have large batteries. They have a comfortable design. They've got really sharp-looking colors. They look good. They have a neat price point. They've stayed the same. They're trying not to raise the prices at all. And those prices, as I said, are often less than half that of comparable models. They all have 750 watts of power, which is the most powerful motor an e-bike can have while maintaining a street legal status, that you don't have to have a driver's license, special driver's license for it. You don't have to ride it in certain areas. You can ride it anywhere you can ride a bike. All four models can go 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. But you do pedal with these. And that's the way we use ours. They have pedal assist. And you can go pedal free if you want, and it'll do all the work for you. But it has five different levels of pedal assist, so you get this extra boost, however much you need. You can combine pedaling yourself or just have it do it all on your own, have it do all the power on your own with the motor, but it's very customizable. You can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. And besides free shipping, this is important. If you use the promo code ROADTREKKING at checkout, leave that promo code, leave it as ROADTREKKING, they'll give you still an additional $75 off. And we've got a video up. You can see our Rad Power Bikes in action. We'll put a link to them on the show notes for this episode. Just go to roadtrekking.com/191. Scroll down and you'll see a link to that video. RadPowerBikes.com.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
Hey, wondering how your road trek does in the snow and ice. I presume you have a 4x4 Sprinter. Hey, second question is, how does your heater do at altitudes around 8,000 to 10,000 feet? Can you give the exact model that you're using and if you had to have an altitude adjustment done?
Okay. Well, let's do ice and snow. We, as regular listeners of the podcast know, we use ours all year round. We love to camp in the winter.
We do, and we have not had any problem whatsoever with the ice and the snow, but we are in Michigan. We do not have the Rocky Mountains to deal with.
Yeah, we don't have many high mountains we got to climb, and I know some of those require, you know, chains and all that stuff, but we do have 4x4, and I have to tell you, I don't really need the 4x4 very much. I used it once this year in a blizzard up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is always snowy in the winter. And I used it for what, maybe 20 seconds or so. And then I turned it off. I wanted to see how well I did without it. And I found out I didn't need it at all. And it was pretty good snow. We got about 10 inches, I think, that day. We've had no problems with ice and snow because we have the CS Adventurous XL 4x4, and it's a heavy enough unit that you have a lot of weight, and that it just does a great job. I mean, I have no problems with it. But as you say, Jen, we don't live out west.
What's going to happen next? You're going to want to move out west because you would love to live in the mountains.
I really would.
We could.
I never
see if we really need 4x4.
Yeah, that's right. Don't you think I had to spend like a year out there, folks?
Yeah, that goes with the high altitude too, because we don't have high altitude.
We don't. And now we have used our heater. I guess maybe 8,000, 9,000 feet. We've been that high with it and had to turn it on in Colorado, and with no problems at all. We've not done any altitude adjustments on the heater. The heater we have is the Aldi heater. It's the heated floors. It's a kind of a hydronic system, which is all the latest rage in RVs right now. There's Therma also makes a similar heater. They're very good. So we're very happy, and we, use our heater quite often. We'll probably use it even on this trip in Canada because it's going to get down in the 40s, I think, tonight or tomorrow night. So we'll probably have to turn the heater on. But I can't tell you much more other than altitude, other than we've used it on a trip up and down the mountains in Colorado, and it worked. It worked great. And hope that answers your question. But, we use ours all year round.
And maybe we can get other people to tell us how everything's worked for them. Answer these questions.
Yeah, those of you
that
camp,
live in the mountains.
Yeah, those of you camp up there all the time, let us know. But we've not had to do anything. Didn't even enter my mind that there was such a thing as an altitude adjustment. So I don't think that's a problem. Okay, one other question.
Yes, where can I find a Heimer motorhome for sale in Colorado? Thank you.
Well, as you know, we don't work for them, so I can't give you where. But I did do a look for you on their website, and you can do the same thing. I went and looked at goheimer.com. That's their website for the Heimer Motor, Irwin Heimer Group of North America, and they do have a dealer. They have a dealer in Colorado Springs. It's Van City RV. So you can go there. Most manufacturers, whichever manufacturer you're ever looking for, if you just go to their website, they'll have a thing, where can I buy, or where's a dealer list, and that's what we found with the Heimer site, which is goheimer.com. So Colorado Springs is the only one I could find in Colorado, so you can do some looking around, and you might have to go elsewhere. And that's often the case. Lots of people have to go, out of state to find, and it's always good to call a bunch of different dealers and get your best deal and go buy it there.
It might be a real trick to find a used one.
Yeah, because they're fairly new. It's going to be harder to find a new one, or a used one. Yeah, yeah. And they're making them like crazy. Hey, maybe I'll get you some more information because we're going to happen to be at the Irwin Heimer factory all this week, and we will we'll find out and get a quick idea how they're doing, and we'll let you know as we keep going. All right, here's an email that we want to pass along that just came in from a guy named George McClure. And George writes, hey, Mike and Jennifer, thank you for all the information you put up on YouTube and in the newsletter. George is a subscriber to that Monday morning newsletter that we send out free to subscribers, kind of an advanced look at what's going on in the RV world for every week. You can subscribe free, by the way, if you go to roadtrekking.com, our travel blog, our RV lifestyle travel blog. You can find a link to subscribe right there. It's absolutely free. We don't spam you or anything. We send you one newsletter every Monday morning. Anyway, he says, we can't thank you enough. We are new RVers, having purchased our 2016 CS Adventurous in December. So far, so good. A couple of questions I've not found answers to yet. How is the best way to wash your road trek, particularly the roof? Well, the best way for me to wash it is to get Jennifer to do it.
I was going to say rain. I was expecting you to say rain.
God does it for me. Yes, that's Camp Skunk's way. The roof is a bit tricky, but really you don't have to do much. Mine is pretty much covered with solar panels. So I do let the rain get it off. Sometimes in the winter when we have 2 feet of snow up there and I want the solar panels to do a little bit of charging, I will take a push broom and a ladder. I'll climb up on an 8-foot ladder and I'll use the push broom to push that snow off, and then you can take a little ride and the wind will blow off the rest of it. Maybe once a year, if it's in the fall when there's a lot of leaves, I will use the ladder to get up there, and I'll take a hose, with a powerful nozzle, and just sort of squirt down the roof. I have been known to take a little push mop that we have and use that on the roof. But usually the rain will take care of the roof for you. We do wash ours a couple of times a year, and once a year, usually we're at an RV show. It's about time again for us. We had it detailed at RV show.
Boy, that was worth the money.
Oh my gosh, it was awesome. If you ever had an RV show at a big rally, there's usually these crews that'll go around, and even many RV parks have mobile RV washers. Get them. They really, they cost you $100.
Try to get the price down.
You can argue, they're negotiable on the price. And we had some guys detail it, and it just looked great. Still does.
Yeah,
somebody just wrote me a comment the other day. Look how nice and clean it looked. And I thought, that's just God's rain that washed it away. But
well, you've got a long-handled brush for washing the road track.
Yeah.
And I love that thing. Probably everybody else already has one, because I used to wash our car all the time. It just seems like so much work to go to the car wash.
Are you using that with the car?
I used it on the car.
Yeah.
And man, was that nice.
Yeah.
I've worked too hard for too many years. That brush just made it so easy to wash the car.
Yep. So anyway, that's how we wash ours. It's pretty simple. And then George asked the following question. Do you rely solely on your Verizon Jetpack, that hotspot, to connect to the internet? I hear some prefer a satellite of some kind. Well, pretty much I use Verizon. Sometimes I don't even need that jetpack because their network is so solid throughout the U.S. But 97% of the time, I use my Verizon jetpack for all of our internet connections. And sometimes I do have to turn on, we have a cell booster. If the signal's somewhat low, that cell booster picks it up and boosts it. And we've written about that on the blog. Just search for cell boosters. You'll find many. We use the Wilson brand, and there's a whole bunch of them. They're called the WeBoost cell. I'll tell you what, if you go to roadtrekking.com/gear, I think the very first item you'll find there is a link to the WeBoost site that Wilson has, and I've just got a new one. It's sitting in our box. I can't open the box because my hand, I don't have full use of my hand from the surgery yet, but
I can't believe you haven't done something.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna, but you would have yelled at me. And it's a pretty neat, this is their newest. It's for RVs, and it's for those who really like to get away. It actually has a telescoping mast, and then this antenna is directional, so you can kind of like rotate it around. So you use it when you're at a campsite. And it's supposed to really just be incredible, picking up the most minuscule signal for when you're in a faraway place. So I got that. As soon as I get full use of my elbow and I can open the box and assemble stuff, I will probably do something on that in the next couple of weeks, and I'll put that on our YouTube channel. But right now I have another WeBoost in my vehicle with an external antenna mounted on the roof with a little magnetic mount. So use a cell booster and Verizon, and that is 97% of the time. Now, you ask about satellite. Yes, you can use, there is satellite internet, and we're testing out a system right now on ours, and we have been for a year. You haven't heard me talk a lot about it, and the reason why is because it's really not commercially available yet. And here's the thing about satellites. The best is yet to come in about a year to a year and a half. And that is when a network of low orbiting satellites will bring really high speed internet availability. You're going to see an explosion in people using these. They move very fast. This antenna that I have is software controlled, and it'll latch onto a satellite. It'll pass from satellite to satellites. It's really going to be great with this new network. Now, it does work. I used it just the other day. We were in a spot up on near Lake Michigan, and I had very poor cell service, and the satellite got me through. But very seldom during it. Now, my friend Camp Skunk has a Hughes satellite dish. I think it's from Hughes. I take that back. I'm not sure it's Hughes, but he has a satellite dish, and he loves it, but it's pretty cumbersome. You got to set up this dish. You got to point it. All that is going to change real quick in the next year, year and a half. So I would not recommend anybody get a satellite internet system now unless you have many, many thousands of dollars to invest and you want to settle for probably much less speed than you would get on your, cellular connection. Not always. There's some that have really good signals, but you gotta, they're cumbersome, and I just don't recommend them. They're too much work for most people. So hang around for the satellites. That'll come eventually. The Verizon hotspot, you know, I'm telling you, 95% of the time, that's all you are going to need. All right, those are our questions. You're happy with our internet connectivity, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on almost as much as I am these days. All right, this part of the podcast brought to you by Steinbring Motor Coach. And we're delightful to have them now up here sponsoring our questions of the week. Steinbring Motor Coach, one of Road Trek's newer dealers. They're located in Garfield, Minnesota, which is west of the Twin Cities. It is worth going to Garfield just to go enjoy the beautiful Chain of Lakes region in Minnesota there, of which Garfield is right in the heart of it. But you want to go to Steinbring before you buy any kind of a motor coach. You want to check them out. Steinbring is a family that's been in the transportation business since 1917. And they've been selling RVs now for a couple of decades. Their sales staff has probably more experience in recreational vehicle industry than anybody else you're going to find anywhere around. The family business celebrating 101 years in business now. It's their name out front, and they treat you like family too. They sell brand new motorhomes from Road Trek, which is the Class B models they sell. They have a full line of all the brand new Road Trek Class B motorhomes, but they also sell brand new Newmar Class A motorhomes. They sell used motorhomes, of course, from everybody, from Road Trek, Newmar, Winnebago, Itasca, Tiffin, Fleetwood. They have every kind of motorhome you're going to want, whether it's a Class A, a Class B, Class C, diesel pusher, gas, toy haulers. They're all there. You will find your next RV at Steinbring's. Check out their website, Steinbring Motor Coach. We've got a link to them in the show notes for this episode. We've been talking about the show notes, roadtrekking.com/191, and you'll find down under the questions of the week their sponsorship and their link. Check them out. You can do a whole lot of business online, on the phone, and then head up there. They'll work a deal to get you up there to get your new motorhome. But we've been there. We've met the folks there. They've been named a Blue Ribbon dealer many, many times, top 50 dealer numerous times. You can count on the Steinbring family and Steinbring Motor Coach for your next RV. Be sure and check them out.
You're listening to the RV Podcast.
You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention,
and background material, videos and photos on the RVPodcast.com travel blog.
And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast.
Just click the send voicemail button on RV Podcast.
Well, it always amazes me, as I said at the very top of the podcast episode today, how our RVs are used, the many, many different uses for RVs, and how they enhance our lifestyle. Jennifer and I, whenever we're on the road and we meet people, we always say, well, what do you do with your RV? What's your hobby? How does it help you? What are the things that you like to do about it? And those stories are just always interesting. They inspire us. They give us ideas about the things that we can do and places we can go. And I thought we'd share one with you that we just recorded during our recent trip to Arizona, where we met a bunch of different RVers. They came out to meet us. They're all from the Arizona area, although they travel everywhere. And so we started asking them, well, tell us about your RV lifestyle. How do you use it? Where do you go? And I think you're going to enjoy meeting these folks, and I bet you're going to get some ideas on what you can do in your RV travels this summer. So let's go to the interview.
I'm Bob Myers, and this is Mary Catherine, and we've been RVing for about decades, I guess, and we've really enjoyed it.
So what are the favorite things that you do as you RV around North America, and why? Why is it?
Well, we like to go to places that have a lot of color, particularly Mary Catherine. She loves plants. She loves to work in the yard. So we go to arboretums and botanical gardens and rallies if we can find them along our way. But those are some of the favorite things we like to do.
Now, Mary Catherine, you had a list that you were working off of. What was that list?
Oh, my husband looked for the top 10 botanical gardens as we travel from Arizona to Virginia. Back and forth and we were in the season of rhododendrons, and there must have been hundreds of rhododendrons that we saw as we traveled throughout this.
So you went to 10 different arboretums. What's your favorite?
Well, not arboretums per se as we travel this time, but we do go up to Bouchard Gardens in Alberta.
That's British Columbia.
British Columbia.
Yeah. In the Pacific Northwest.
Just filled with, it's an old mine pit, not mine pit.
It's a rock quarry. Rock quarry.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they just have filled it with gorgeous, gorgeous plants. And they're always in bloom. There's something always gorgeous
so
in bloom.
So your hobby, your passion is flowers.
Yes.
And your RV, which is also your passion, allows you to go visit the most beautiful flowers in all of North America.
Absolutely. It's just wonderful being able to travel in our RV.
Well, beside the 10 botanical gardens, one of the other things that we did was to lobster our way through New England and over into Nova Scotia.
Lobster.
Yeah, we would stop periodically, and we had lobster outside sometimes, lobster at a restaurant sometimes. We were in Quebec, and we went to a restaurant that had only French-speaking people, but they understood that we wanted a meal of lobster, and they did fine. So we enjoyed going different locations to get mostly full whole lobsters to
Where was the best lobster?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard one. Probably the one in Quebec. I don't remember the name of the community, but it wasn't in the larger communities like Montreal or something like that. It was kind of a little country community, I think, up on the St. Lawrence River, it was very good, very inexpensive.
Fresh lobster.
Yeah.
Working your way out.
Yeah.
What another great use of the RV.
Yeah. And it was like $7-$8, couldn't believe the price.
Or five.
Yeah,
Whole lobster.
Yeah.
But that was a few years ago.
That was a nice trip.
If I heard right, you've had 6 Class Bs.
Yes.
Have you ever been in A or anything else, or just Bs?
We've just been in Bs. We've had 4 road treks and 2 leisure travels. We have had 6 road treks and 2 leisure travels. So it's always been a Class B since 1988. Now, I'll back up and say a little bit before that, when our kids were traveling with us, we did have a couple of somewhat larger RVs, but since 88, it's been Class Bs all the way.
So you have seen, let me count this up, 8 Class B RVs
Correct.
Over the years.
Yes.
And a couple of bigger guys.
Yes, that's right.
And you're still in a Class B.
Still a Class B, yep. Yeah.
So what advice would you give newbies, people that are thinking about getting
an RV?
Of any kind.
Well, check all the sizes and check all the models. We were just looking at the ones here today and noticing certain features like where the TV is located. I have some problems with my neck, and I see some of the TVs are way up towards the top. So look at everything, maybe try it out, because it's hard to think of everything when you're wandering through the RV. So take your time, look at all the models, see what kind of size you need. Depends on how many you're going to be carrying, if you're carrying kids or grandkids or just the two of you. Be thinking about all of those things when you're looking at a new RV.
And where should they go first to visit?
Oh, gosh. Well, it kind of depends on your location. We like this area. We were glad we moved out here because there's so much to see in the
Southwest.
Southern part of Utah, and, of course, Arizona, our home state. So if you like scenery, this is a good place to go.
All the time we've been talking, Mary Catherine's been looking at her photos, with photos of pictures on them. And there she is. Yeah, she's showing us the pictures. If I could use the microphone to show you, I'd see you. But they're absolutely beautiful.
Absolutely gorgeous, beautiful pictures.
Oh, top 10 botanical gardens.
Yes.
Mary Catherine's
it's
been there.
Number one.
And Bob.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, tell us your names, first of all.
I'm Sandy.
And I'm Dave.
All right. Sandy and Dave, how do you use your RV?
So our goal originally when we got the RV was to see every nook and cranny of Arizona. And so we have gone to the state parks, the state monuments, the national parks, the national monuments, and a whole bunch of other stuff that Sandy has found searching the internet pertaining to the history of Arizona and all the things that have happened here.
Now, why, besides this is a beautiful state, it's very diverse geography from mountains, desert, but what made you just pick one state to do?
Dave was still working, and so we couldn't take long trips, so we leave in Saturday morning and come back Sunday afternoon. And we can see a major portion of Arizona that way. And we love to boondock, so we don't need reservations for places.
So you have a Class B, a Zion?
A Zion, yes, and we love it.
And tell me, which also point out, Sandy, you're in a motorized chair. You have MS, and you're out there boondocking.
Yes, 3 weekends a month we
do
it.
This is awesome. And do you know what an inspiration this is going to be to so many other people who say, oh, I can't go out and do that? Yes, you can, can't you?
I would love to hear from other disabled people that do that because, yeah, you can. You can do it. And you can get outside in the forest and see nature because that's one of my big things.
And you also have a hobby.
Yes, I do. I'm an amateur radio operator, KB7KY, and I enjoy operating what's called portable. So I have a portable station that I set up when we go out and boondock. And you can put up as big of an antenna as you have time and effort to put up.
Yeah, well, I K8ZRH here. We'll give our little ham radio calls. And you are also a ham radio operator.
N7QZB.
And so between ham radio in the desert and seeing every nook and cranny, tell us about Arizona. I mean, why is that such a great state to go out and explore like that?
Well, as we were talking, the border is maligned, I think, because we camp on the border in the winter months, and we have had no problem, and we think it's beautiful down there, and
a lot of history.
Never had any problems, despite everything we hear about the border?
No, over two years, and we have never been approached.
Now, that's in the desert, right? Now, I see Jennifer thinking about that. She's got one question about the desert.
How about the snakes?
She's worried about rattlesnakes.
I think we might have met one little snake. Haven't met any.
His name was Bob.
Scorpions.
He's a used car salesman.
He was trying to sell some snake oil.
Yeah.
We have had cows wander through our park.
You had cows wander through?
Wander through our boondocking, yes.
Yeah. But people worry about stuff. Like my wife in particular worries about snakes. But you know.
I worry about venomous snakes with a dog.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Although the dogs, they don't learn very quickly about, I think they're kind of bred in that they hear the noises and stuff and they're curious, but once they start to strike like the snakes do, most dogs back up.
Now, in Arizona, you have the border. Most people I've met in Arizona say they go away during the summertime because it gets too hot. But you stay and continue to boondock, and your RV keeps taking you places. Talk about how that lets you control your climate, so to speak.
You mean about going
south
in the winter and north in the when it gets hotter? We head north. And so the climate here is amazing because you can camp all year round, if just knowing where the right places to go and the elevation.
We use the Wunder map and the elevation to form where we're gonna, start looking around. So, in Arizona, there's different bands. We have a thing called the Mogollon Rim, which is a real tall uprising, and then there's the San Francisco Peaks up by Flagstaff. So that's in the 8,000 foot range, and then you can get into the 5,000 foot range, and then here we're pretty much sea level.
So you could pretty much be comfortable temperatures every day of the year, just depending on where you are in Arizona.
Right. Because of the MS, I don't like to go over 81 degrees in outside, and we can do that. We have done that for 2 years.
Sandy, it was 100 degrees here 2 days ago when we arrived.
And I was not outside.
That's right. That's why they made air conditioning, right?
Yeah.
How does your Zion perform when it's hot in the air conditioning?
We never use it.
You never use it?
No, nope, we don't go. We have used the air conditioner twice since we've owned it.
And you're in Arizona?
Yes.
And that's because you use elevation to do it.
Right.
The only time we used it, we went on a trip to California and we took some other people and they were in the back. And so we ran the air conditioner the whole time. And yeah, the air conditioner does not keep up when it's 120.
And I got to ask you guys, I don't think anybody keeps up when it's 120. How did you guys get into RVing?
It was always a goal of ours, and so we started looking around at vehicles, and we narrowed it down, and we saw your vlog.
Saw our blog.
And so then we narrowed it down to the road trek.
One of our requirements was that we want to park our RV in the street, and we have a 21-foot limit in our city. And so pretty much the way it works is I come home from my ham radio breakfast on Saturday, and Sandy says, I want to go. And within an hour or so, we're out of here. And then we're done, and then we come back. I have an arrangement where I basically use the clean out at my house, and I bought a big long hose. So we don't go to the dump station or anything. So about an hour on the front side and an hour on the back side.
You never have to even plug in, right?
We never plug in?
No, we have not. And
that's that boondocking capabilities that you have.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys. That's a great idea. I mean, I can see people everywhere picking a state and just getting to know your state well. You know?
It's inspiration to everybody.
Okay, we've got some new RVers. First, tell us your names.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Debbie.
Okay, now, when did you start RVing?
We started just in December. We have a new Zion.
So tell me, what do you do with your RV?
Our RV takes us to places where we can birdwatch. So we get out there in boondock and we wake up in the morning and we're surrounded with exactly why we came, which is nature and the birds. The binoculars come out and we're good for the day.
Wow. So you're both birders?
Yes. Yes.
Now, how long have you been birders?
Oh.
Me since I was a kid, and you probably for 10 years now?
Yeah, probably 10 years.
Yeah. So tell us, where have you gone and where have you seen birds?
Being here in Arizona means we have a whole bunch of amazing destinations that are just a short drive away, so a couple hours. And so we've been down to the Patagonia area. We've been to Whitewater Draw, where you wake up in the morning to 15 to 20,000 sandhill cranes wishing you good morning, which is not quiet, but it's so cool. So we've been there. We've been over to the beach in California. We're about to go to Anza Borrego State Park. And the amazing thing about the Zion is we've not plugged in once.
Wait a minute. You've not gone to a campground where you had a plug-in?
No, not once. So we've...
You're boondockers.
We are absolutely boondockers, and that's why the Zion was so appealing to us, because we want the freedom to be out in nature, not being surrounded by hundreds of people all trying to find nature but only bumping into each other.
So describe a morning of boondocking and waking up with your birds around you.
So, you know, the thing about any kind of camping is you're going to bed early because it gets dark, and then you're getting up early. So you're literally getting up with the birds. You're hearing them wake up, and that wakes you up, and that's just an amazing start to the day. We make coffee and wait for the sun to come up. You're waiting for the birds to get active. By the time we've had breakfast, they're out having breakfast. So when you get out there and you're one of the first people out there, you're seeing the things that if you had to drive 2 hours to get there, it would be gone. We saw a barn owl one morning, and then by the time we were telling someone else where it was gone. You know, we saw javelinas and fox and coyotes just all getting ready to start their day. And
where do you find these spots?
I use a variety of apps that point out the free camping, but I start with mainly with where are the birds, and then is it a place that we can park near those birds? How close can we park near those birds? And it's been phenomenal. It's just been wonderful.
So you use your RV to find birds.
Yes, to extend our hobby in ways that add so much enjoyment, because by the time you're done birding, then you've got the scenery, you've got hikes, you've got relaxation around a campfire. So rather than just being something you do for a couple hours and go home, which we still do, now it's what brings us out into nature to have, you know, great days and nights.
How did you get into RVing in the first place?
I saw your blog.
You saw our blog?
Yeah. I was wondering. Neither of us wanted something big, but we didn't. When we first started looking at this, nobody really knew what Class Bs were, and we were starting to think maybe that's what we can do, and maybe that's drivable. And so we started following your and Jennifer's travels and looking at what you were doing and envisioning how we could do it too with what we like to do.
Wow. Well, we hope to see you out there.
Yeah.
And you can help us figure out birds.
Yeah, that's right.
We'd be happy
to. We can
do
that.
Yeah. We'd be happy to.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Well, that was really fun. I hope you enjoyed meeting those four couples as much as we did. We saw them in Arizona, and we're going to try and do that every time we're in a gathering where we meet a lot of different folks, is just to share how we use our RVs, because there's so many ways. And I hope that you got some ammunition if you are trying to convince somebody that you travel with that you need to get an RV. I hope that helped. Hope it gave you some ideas. I hope it gave you some inspiration. And again, we look forward to all the different ways that we can use our RVs. There's so many ways, and it really does enhance our lifestyle, gets us in touch with nature. Do you notice how many of those people don't even go to campgrounds? They don't have to because of the technology on today's RVs with solar power and with lithium batteries. Don't even have to go. And let's face it, you go to most campgrounds, they're so crowded. It's so hard to get into a campground. That's what I'm going to be talking about at this owner's school. Get out there, boondock, enjoy nature. There's so many places to go, and it's all just waiting for you. Hey, the interview of the week is brought to you each week by our pals at SunshineStateRVs.com in Gainesville, Florida, where every new or used Road Trek motorhome is delivered to the customer free to your driveway anywhere in the country. At Sunshine State RVs, you're going to find a huge selection of Class B RVs. I don't think anyone in North America has more used Class Bs than SunshineStateRVs.com. Now, if you're looking for a new one, they also sell brand new Road Treks, Coachmen, and a couple of other Class B brands. But if you're looking for a used Class B, which is a great way to get in, get that depreciation out of the way. Somebody else paid for all that, and you can find some great bargains on used Class Bs. Maybe you're just trying to get in the first time. Class B RVs are expensive. And the best, most economical way, that's how Jennifer and I got in 7 years ago. We bought a used one, and then you kind of work your way up. They sell RVs, used RVs, from 1990 up to just last year. So they have a huge variety of them from all of the big manufacturers of Class Bs like Road Trek, Pleasure Way, Winnebago, Leisure Travel Vans, many more. You will not find a wider selection of used Class Bs anywhere else in North America. And here's what impresses us so much. Every RV, new and used, that they sell goes through a very thorough 172-point inspection. They make sure that all of the mechanical, all of the manual systems are in top condition. Every RV is road tested to make sure it runs and drives the way it should. They go over the interior and the outside, every component turned on, tested to make sure it works. All of their RVs are thoroughly cleaned, detailed inside and out. They even check the roof for cracks or replace silicone caulking. And again, every new or used Road Trek RV that you buy from Sunshine State RVs will be delivered to you free to your driveway anywhere in the country. Or you can fly down there to Gainesville, Florida, and take possession of your RV and go enjoy Florida. SunshineStateRVs.com. Please, please, please tell them that you heard about them on the RV podcast.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
All right, time to check in with our pal, our traveling tech expert, Steve Van Dinter. Hey, Steve.
Hi there, Mike. Well, last week we talked about some great gift ideas for mom. And if that wasn't enough to get you inspired for Mother's Day, today I'm back with a few more great gift suggestions. First, quality time with the family. Poolside, beachside, outside, or inside sounds even better with the JBL Link 10 speaker. It's a small and super portable, not to mention Bluetooth and Wi-Fi enabled wireless speaker. Plus, it's water and drop proof, and it's compatible with the Google Assistant, so mom totally won't have to lift a finger to ask what the weather's like or to call up her favorite song. For the mom on the go, the PopSockets vent mount is the perfect travel companion. As long as she's got a pop socket on her phone, all she needs to do is slide it into the vent mount and then attach it to her vent. Now it'll hold her phone in place so she can use it to navigate or for playing music. And if she's spending a lot of time out and about, she's probably going to appreciate a free hand while taking phone calls. The brand new Jabra Elite 65 wireless earbuds are a stylish and functional way to do just that. Four onboard microphones mean crystal clear audio, and she's got the choice of tuning out ambient noise or allowing it in. The earbuds are also compatible with the Google Assistant, Siri, and Amazon's Alexa, letting her get information and stay connected all via voice. And lastly, does mom have a cracked smartphone screen and no time to fix it? Verizon's Total Mobile Protection has her covered with fast, convenient cracked screen repairs. Plus, repairs are cost-effective at a $29 deductible for select smartphones. With this week's traveling technology tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
Okay, I'll put links in the show notes to all of those gadget gizmos that Steve just talked about. Just go to roadtrekking.com/191 and you'll find them. And the traveling tech segment of the podcast every week is brought to you by Verizon Wireless. Verizon Wireless, of course, is America's most reliable wireless network. They are the exclusive wireless provider for the RV podcast as we're out and about throughout North America. That is the network that we rely on for drop-dead, solid, constant contact information online, always with Verizon. As I said earlier in answering somebody's question, I bet 95, 97% of the time I have a 4G LTE signal no matter where we are as we travel about North America. Verizon is ranked highest in leading network studies and multiple tests year after year. Can your network say that? If not, you're on the wrong network, pal. Get unstuck and head over to Verizon.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
All right, gathering this week. It's a sold-out event, but it is you'll be reading about it on our social media and our Road Trekking group on Facebook. It's the Road Trekking Sonoma Wine Tour Gathering at the Indian Leap Winery in Sonoma. That starts on May 10th and goes through May 14th, 2018. Wish we could have been there. Jennifer and I had hoped to be there, but we had this commitment in Canada that we had to do, and then I'm still kind of recovering from this elbow surgery. So all of you out there listening to us in Sonoma, enjoy that wine at the Indian Leap Winery and your beautiful tour of Sonoma. May 10th through the 13th is the Summer RV Show in West Palm Beach, Florida. It's at the South Florida Fairgrounds in West Palm Beach. May 27th through June 1st is the Escapees RV Club National Rally. For our friends in the Escapees RV Club, that's at the Missouri State Fairgrounds in Sedalia, Missouri. June 7th through the 10th is the Tampa Bay Summer RV Show, and that will be held in Tampa, Florida, at the Florida State Fairgrounds there in Tampa. June 18th through the 22nd, we will be at this one. This is another one of our road trekking gatherings. This is going to be our annual photo safari at Glacier National Park, and we're all camped together at the Chewing Black Bones RV Park on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation, just a couple of miles from one of the entrances to Glacier. We'll be there June 18th through the 22nd. And one more that I want to get you on your schedule. That's July 9th through the 13th. And this one, I think, still does have some openings. You can follow the link on our show notes for it. But July 9th through the 13th, this is going to be fun. This is a road trekking Nantahala River Wild Water Adventure. We'll be going down the Nantahala River. There's from novices to advanced, different types of rafts and floats that you can take down. But we'll all be hanging out at the Smoky Mountains Meadows Campground, and that is in Bryson City, North Carolina. Links to all of these events on our RV calendar can be found on the roadtrekking.com website. Just go to roadtrekking.com/191.
Traveling and celebrating the RV lifestyle. This has been the RV Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for the next episode? Just click the send voicemail link on the RVpodcast.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there somewhere off the beaten path.
So ends another episode of the RV Podcast. Remember, if you'd like to have your voice heard, be a part of the podcast, please leave us a voicemail message by clicking the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website, or you can use any recording device, an MP3, and then just send it to me at mike@rvlifestyle.com. Please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Share it. Tell somebody else about it. New episodes of the podcast released every Wednesday morning. We invite you to join our mailing list for our weekly newsletter. We send out a special free newsletter to subscribers only every Monday morning. You can subscribe to that and find out information about our YouTube channel. All that, just go to roadtrekking.com and you'll see links to all of that stuff. Hey, I don't know where you are this week. Hope you are out there somewhere across North America enjoying the RV and the RV lifestyle. Till next time, on behalf of my wife, Jennifer, and our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland. We'll see you on the road.